Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, this is Ground Zero, celebrating Loving the Movement. Hosted by Anaya Lentz and Reginald Clemens, we celebrate by recognizing the small steps and leaps and bounds of individuals and activist groups who have led us further away from slavery and closer to full freedom. For mass incarceration, through efforts for justice reform, and in society at large. Today, I would like to continue to talk about the execution by medical neglect within the Department of Corrections. And I'm hoping to possibly have a live witness called into the show today who witnessed someone passing away due to the doctors quitting and walking off the job because they weren't getting paid for 3 months. They were talking about doing a pay cut on medical staff as well. There are medical companies that have contracted with the Department of Corrections, and then because of lawsuits and litigation complications and malpractice suits, they've violated their contract and left the department or pulled back or went bankrupt. And there's a lot of different things that have been going on with these multi-billion-dollar contracts and everything. But the one thing that hasn't been happening is we have not been receiving adequate medical treatment. I would just like to say thank God after a year of fighting.
Hold on, Reggie. They calling.
Hello. This is a free call.
So this is the witness that
an offender at the Jefferson City Correctional Center.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
I'm going to get them in the call, merge the call, and we'll be right back on the air. Sorry about the inconvenience.
If you want to privately monitor a number for receiving calls from this facility, press 6. Thank you for using Securus. You may start the conversation now.
Hello?
Hey, how you doing? I'm merging the call now. Reggie is on the other line. Reggie.
Yes.
We have your witness on the line.
Oh, okay. Hey, how you doing, bro?
I'm doing good. How you doing?
I'm all right. You're on air. Yeah, so you'll know. Make sure you're fine with being recorded for posterity on a podcast, Ground Zero.
Okay.
Hosted by myself and Anaya Lentz. So, how you doing?
I'm doing pretty good, overall, considering.
Would you please like to introduce yourself?
My name is James Scott.
Yes. And I already let everybody know that you are a live witness to the brother that passed away on the wall. I'll let you go ahead to explain everything that happened on the way to trial.
All right, it was about probably a month and a half, 2 months ago, roughly somewhere around there. It was a Friday night when we was going to Chow. And I was walking with next to a guy that I know here in the wing and have known for years. And we got almost to the Chow Hall. And he sort of bent forward and went to grab his knees and
what's his name again?
Joseph Frumkins.
Okay.
And when he fell back, his momentum took him back in his his eyes quickly bulged. And I'm standing over him, yelling his name, Skip. Everybody called him Skip. And I'm trying to talk to him and find out what's going on. And I yelled at the CO, I said, you know, did this man fell and he hit his head really hard.
Did you, could you hear it when his head hit?
Yes, I heard it.
Oh, man.
And I've been locked up, you know, almost 30 years, and I've never heard a guy's head hit as hard as he did. And I told the CO, and she said, I know, well, she come over, and I guess she called a code 16 with medical emergency. And from the time it happened until we believe he expired was probably about 6-7 minutes before medical got there. And we watched him go from a pasty white to a pink to a red to a purplish blue to a blue.
Oh, man.
And, you know, they tried saying, you know, later that night we heard that they said he died before he hit the ground. Well, that wasn't the case. You know, he was moving, you know, he wasn't coherent. You know,
right.
He probably knew what was going on. But
so he was still alive after.
Yes. Yes, and there's a bunch of people that can witness that. Well, his head raised up off the ground. And when his head raised up off the ground, it was like somebody turned the spigot off. And the blood started gushing out of his head. You know, myself and a couple other
guys. Gushing out of the back of his head or his ears?
The back of his head where his head hit.
Right, okay.
Myself and a few other people yelled at the CEO, he's bleeding. And she goes, I know. Well, they performed no CPR on the man. They did a turn him up. You know, I don't know what that would have did.
But he needed more than comfort.
Yeah. Well, when medical
this calls from a correctional facility may be monitored and recorded.
I'm trying to talk to him, knowing I'm probably not talking to him, probably the involved there, but
trying to keep him conscious.
And I think he knew what was going on, because
right.
When his head hit the ground, his eyes bulged and his expression didn't change at all. And we're yelling at the CO, we're yelling at the sergeant, we're yelling at and whoever we could, say, hey, this cat needs help. This cat needs help. When we told him that his head was bleeding, you know, they went to the kitchen and they got some paper towels, come back out. By the time medical got there,
well, how long did it take for medical to get there?
Between 5 and 7 minutes.
Okay, 7 minutes, 5-7 minutes.
And it is probably 100 yards, or if that, from where it happened to medical.
Right.
They brought no crash cart. They brought no ambulance bag, even assist him. They got the stretcher.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
They got the stretcher board from the officer down the room, which is, you know, clear on the other side of the camp. And they had to walk to the kitchen to get it. But
so they didn't have a stretcher on the court?
No.
And what kind of court is it?
It's like a golf cart.
Oh, okay. So it's the golf cart type of thing.
And, you know, I wasn't one of the ones to help, but there was a couple guys that literally helped put him on the board and put him on the stretcher. All right, put him on the golf cart. And one of the guys told me when he rolled over, he relieved himself, which means he probably, I don't know.
So he released his bowels and his bladder. And that's a sign that a person has expired.
Well, somebody said, somebody yelled at the nurse, it's about time you all get here. And one of them made the comment, you know, we try.
Hey, real quick, I don't want to interrupt, but you guys have 2 minutes before Reggie's phone hangs up. So you'll still be able to keep talking, but as soon as Reggie calls back, I'll have to click him back in on the three-way.
Okay.
All right. So 2 minutes. Well, a minute and 30 seconds now.
So, I explained things prior to this interview about there not being any doctors here at that time, and the doctors had walked off the job because they weren't getting paid.
Right.
Do you know how long before or about what day this incident took place?
I can find out for sure. And, you know, possibly call you back next week to find out or to let you know, or if there's another way that you and I can communicate.
We can do a short call next week so that you can personally inform people, because I believe in informed trust. And that way we don't have to question what the facts and the truth is, because present proof and evidence.
You have 1 minute left.
For people to know people.
That's 1 minute, y'all.
But the last thing you were saying was that he relieved himself while he was on the stretcher.
Right. No, he relieved himself before they put him on. As soon as they put him on the board, he relieved himself.
Mm. Oh. Okay.
Mm.
You have 1 minute left.
Yeah, I think that's both of us. They got 1 minute left. We're gonna both have to call back.
Okay.
All right, well, my fear is, retaliation from the administration.
Right.
I'll try my best to be able to click you guys in, but if y'all are calling at the same time, I won't be able to click you in. So if one doesn't go through, just call right back.
I said this is a activist movement and public interest and public safety issue where we're looking for a litigation.
Thank you for using Securus. Goodbye.
All right, so yeah, we have 14 minutes on the call, and for me, right, I'm a very key, I like to point out key words, and something that Reggie said was informed trust. We need to understand informed trust. That is...
Jefferson City Correctional Center.
That is, let's define informed trust. That is the ability to have the knowledge, insight, and future, and transparency that allows us to be able to trust what is being said by somebody else, an accusation or anything. So that's transparency, that's insight, so that's like the future part, and then the ability to know that it is knowledgeable so that I can trust the person telling me this story, informed trust. I just wanted to point that out and break that part down. Because that's not a word that you want to just throw around and be like, oh, yeah, we have an informed trust with the public. But does the community know you? How many times have you reached out to the community? How many times have you been able to, like, does the community know your process of things? And that's on a larger scope, on like a macro level, and the micro level is obviously when you're listening and you're having conversations with people and they're telling you stories. Well, is that person that you have that relationship with, do they have a history where they are trustworthy and have given you knowledge and insight onto, basically, do they got the facts to back up what they're saying? You know what I'm saying? Are they a readily person, or are they somebody who makes stuff up off the top of their head? So that's where we're at with informed trust. And for us, for us, we want the people to know that these are not just testimonies of fear, and we are exaggerating details or the idea of not credible witnesses because of X, Y, Z, trauma, this, that, and the other. No, these are stories and recollections of actual events that happened. And as gruesome as they can be and hard to bear, they are true. They are factual. Real-life testimonies, and they need to be taken seriously and not shrugged off because, oh, that's just an inmate. That's just a criminal. So we got Reggie back on the line. We're waiting on him, our guest speaker, to also call back. But we got anything you want to say, Reggie?
Yes, I'd like to address the thing that he brought up with retaliation. There's a case of Blair. It's called Santiago versus Blair, and it retaliation which violates the First Amendment to the United States Constitution, where you have the right to petition the government. No law shall abridge that right. Retaliation would abridge that right because it would suppress you bringing forth your claims of constitutional violations. That's a legal point. I want to clarify the intentions of this show. And it is for criminal justice reform.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
It's not personal. It's not impersonal. It's that we're not looking or seeking to attack the system, but to reform and help correct the system. Because if something is never spoken of or spoken of, that's how massacres begin. When people gain impunity to do whatever malicious or wicked thing they want to do, unchecked and unchallenged, unquestioned, that opens the door to so many heinous violations of human rights and desecration of religious beliefs and practices. It draws us, and that's what it is that we're addressing. And without addressing the problem or talking about the problem, we'll never come to a solution. Problem, solution, plan of action. You have to take out the time to analyze the problem before you can come up with a solution. And then after you came up with a solution, that is not enough, because now you have to come up with a plan of action to apply that solution. And that's a process. That's a real process that it is taught, and it actually works, and it is utilized historically. Problem, solution, plan of action. And here at Ground Zero, that's what we're trying to do. Analyze the problem. Come up with a solution. So that there can be an applied plan of action.
Yes.
And right now, we're analyzing the problem of execution by medical neglect.
Exactly, man.
It's a dramatic title, but it's also a truthful title.
It's sad, but it's true.
What we bring you is the tip of the iceberg. The rest of the iceberg is up under the water, and it has to be addressed. The whole thing needs to be addressed.
Mm-hmm.
The house is going to spread and grow until we're forced to address it, until it sinks a Titanic or something. And a lot of people's lives are lost.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't just leave these icebergs floating around like they're cute, because they're not. They're dangerous. And we have it. So I can only offer you the tip of the iceberg because I don't have access to every piece of information throughout the Department of Corrections. And I understand there are some people that want to protect their jobs and everything, but is protecting your job more important than protecting lives? And I've always said, and I'm willing to work with the administration for the greater good.
So,
work with the administration. Yeah.
So you said something before, and I want to key in on that piece where you're like is protecting your job, right? Something that is greater, is it greater than protecting lives? And like you say here at Ground Zero, we analyze the problem, but we also talk about solutions. And one thing about the show, we've analyzed a lot of problems, right? We've come up with, we have, of course, our AIDS trust fund solution, but direct solutions that can spark ideas and spark dreams in the people that are listening. And I wanna hone in on that one thing is your job, right, greater than the life of somebody else's life. The problem also is that there is no counter to, well, when I get my job, where do I go? You know what I'm saying? Like, is there a way that we can create an ability for protection, either to keep your job? Is there a way that we can form a coalition defends your job? So you either have protection under law. If there is no protection in the law, then it needs to go to law and protect. It needs to be defended. Oh, and then the third thing, which is if those two things aren't possible and we going back and forth on whether we can do those two things and y'all not budging on that, then we need to talk about building a whole new system altogether when it comes to the correctional facility and how and that gets into culture, because it's not like I'm saying restart the wheel. No, we understand we need institutions that house and rehabilitate people. That's dope. That's prison. That's that, right? But we need to change the culture that prison manifests in the fact that correctional officers, doctors, those people in place who are there on the micro level of the ins and outs of everyday prison life, we gotta change that culture to the fact that why don't y'all care? You know what I'm saying? How do we adjust that culture? And that's a culture issue.
There's something that I mentioned in the previous show called the Milgram Experiment.
Mm-hmm. We have mentioned that.
Yeah, and in the Milgram Experiment, it shows how rapidly, under certain conditions, people will abuse their authority.
Exactly.
Abuse one another.
Exactly. Exactly.
That's why we need checks and balances.
Exactly. And it's not even, sometimes it's not even about checks and balances. It's more like, what like you said, he said there are conditions. So if the condition is there, we have to figure out a way to remove the condition. What does that mean? That means that prisons are probably going to have to be a little bit more comfortable than the way they are building them. They're going to have to be a little bit more colorful too. You get what I'm saying? Like that whole dull gray environment, everything, you know, things slam. That type of environment is not conducive. That's the same type of environment they have at hospitals. Why psych wards are always fucked up. This is why mental illness is at an all-time high, because the culture is not conducive to the condition.
There's a lot to be said for a wholesome, clean,
exactly,
a disciplined environment.
Exactly.
Discipline is good, but discipline alone is not enough.
Exactly.
Discipline has to be structured around,
exactly,
purpose.
Purpose.
When you connect the discipline to a purpose, it's more easy to enforce that discipline.
Exactly.
But when you just discipline somebody for discipline's sake, mind just a standard line.
This call is from a correctional facility and may be monitored and recorded.
All right, so we got 2 minutes for you, Reggie. You want to close us out here? He hasn't called back yet.
But you're not just standing in line with nowhere to go. That's discipline without a purpose.
Right.
Yes. I would like to say thank you all for listening. It means everything to me. I pray that we improve upon our humanity. I pray that we draw closer to one another. We find a way to work together across racial lines, across gender lines, across religious lines, across every line that in order to reach the solutions we need. When I say I love you all, I truly do. It hangs me when I see other people hurt. And I thank God for that depth of humanity. God for that compassion. I thank God for that compassion because it reminds me I have not lost my soul in this dismal pain and torment that I suffer day in and day out. I haven't been institutionalized completely. I still have enough humanity to be sorry and apologetic and to try and find a way to make the world a better place. So, pain with joy. Thank you. I love you. I pray for you and I ask you to pray for me. Anaya.
All right, Tal. So you heard it from Reggie himself. This was a great show. Thank you for listening. Humanity overall, that's just everything. And yeah, peace out. This is Ground Zero with Anaya Betts and Reggie Clemens, and we are signing off now.